Issues, Etc., regular guest Pastor Stephen Parks on why your congregation should join the Issues, Etc. 300.
If I could, I'd just like to challenge any Lutheran pastors that are listening to consider becoming one of the congregations that supports Issues, Etc. My own congregation is a very small church, and I know it can be difficult to try and budget $1,000 a year to become one of the Issues, Etc. 300. But if you're being blessed by this, as I know you are, and if your congregation is being blessed by this, as I know that it is, I submit to bring it to the congregation to prayerfully consider supporting the outreach of Issues, Etc., not only here in the United States, but also around the world. Thank you so much for what you do.
Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues, Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget. Simply go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues, Etc. The Issues, Etc. 300.
But then comes Holy Week, and the pain and the scorn and the shame of the cross. And we're reminded that in that moment he took on the sins of the world, past, present, and future.
I have no doubt whatsoever that Barack Obama is a very typical 21st century mainline Protestant.
When you look at the church at Corinth, it really is Issues, Etc. It'd be great to go back in time and give every member of that congregation an I Have Issues t-shirt.
Whether Christ's resurrection happened has nothing to do with faith. What it means, what its benefits are, that's a matter of faith.
Indiana truck drivers love Issues, Etc.
It is often said that those who forget history or who never knew it in the first place are doomed to repeat it. There is an importance to history for us as citizens. There is an added importance of history to us as Christians. Christians live by history. Our history not only is of interest, our history is of importance. There are mistakes and there are achievements made in Christian history that the mistakes we don't want to repeat and the achievements we want to continue to achieve. We live by the tradition of the church. We stand on the shoulders of those who have said and thought and written before us. Now, for Reformation Christians, this is especially important because our history says a lot about who we are and who we confess to be as Reformation Christians, as Lutherans, is written in our history. Why should we know Reformation history? I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues, Etc., coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 4th of May. Thanks for tuning us in. Gene White from the CLCC, Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission, will be joining us for the first part of this first hour. After that, we'll remember, along with the rest of the Reformation Church, Friedrich Winneken, one of the founders of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Dr. Larry Rast of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will help us do that. In the second hour of the program, we'll have our regular visit with Jennifer Roback Morse of the Ruth Institute. Then, open lines for your answer to this question: how should Christians react to the death of Osama bin Laden? You can leave your answer to that question at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Email your answer to us in advance, or as we enter open lines in the second hour of the program, talk back at issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc or anytime in the next 2 hours of the program, but especially during open lines in the second hour, give us a call, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-6943. Open lines in the second hour: how should Christians react to the death of Osama bin Laden? Gene White is treasurer and member of the board of directors for the CLCC, Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission. He's author of the booklet, Your Reformation Walk, A Study of Church History from the First to the 20th Century. Gene, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hi, good to be with you.
I understand why pastors and professional theologians need to understand Reformation history. I mean, we have to learn about this in the seminary, and it's good to know the history of our confession, but Why should Lutheran lay people also be familiar with their own history?
Well, to me, I think it's very important. And being a history buff, I guess I might be a little biased in that direction. But the thing that always struck me was getting things in the right context. And in fact, when in this particular booklet, that's one of the things I really struggled to do, because up until the time of the Reformation, the civil government and the religious government were pretty much wrapped around the same axle. And so when you go back and look at the early church, you don't really get the context unless you know what's going on politically and geographically at the same time. And that really set the stage for the Reformation. And so it's really kind of foundational information in order to understand all the forces that were in play when the Reformation happened. Now, for me, you know, I have, you know, contact with lots of people who aren't Lutherans, and particularly some of my Catholic friends. They have a very negative view of Martin Luther, as you might guess, or at least a misconceived view. And, you know, they look at him as some monk in some little hick town in Germany that decided to post this statement on the church door and started all this controversy. And in reality, he wasn't just some little old pastor in some little hick town in Germany. And I think a lot of us don't recognize that Martin Luther was on the fast track for leadership within the church until he posted the 95 Theses on the door. And so it gives a lot of context to why he even did it, because he was responsible. He was the responsible guy for this. And again, that's all part of context, I guess. And so it really, when you talk to other people, if you don't know that, then how do you respond and say, well, gee, yeah, I know he came from Wittenberg, but, you know. So anyway, to me, I think that's very important. And the second point out of all that question that you asked was that we as laity are supposed to know these things just like our pastors know them, because it's part of what we are as Lutherans. And if you know, we are also our pastor's judges. And so if we don't know enough to know if we're being given the right information or biased information, then shame on us for the same reason. So,
Gene, let's talk a little bit about that context. You write briefly about the church before the 16th century, and focus, if you would, on that almost complete equation of political and ecclesiastical power that was, as you said before, set the stage for the Reformation. What was it like? How did it come about?
Well, my take on the whole thing was that from about the 3rd century on, the Roman Catholic Church became certainly more hierarchical than it was in the first 3 centuries. And as it became more hierarchical, it became more self-centered, you might say, in the sense of, you know, we are the power. And there were some interesting things that happened in the early church that relate to, you know, the Bishop of Rome and eventually the schism with the Orthodox in Constantinople and all that, which in fact created the Holy Roman Empire, which was the princely power at the time of Martin Luther. And there were so many controversies going on during that period of time and so much corruption going on that it's mind-boggling, you know. There was a guy who wrote a book about that called, The Bad Popes, I believe it was. I mentioned it in the book, actually, because it's mind-boggling all of the corruption that was going on within the church. And yet most people didn't know any of that because it was so centralized and in a sense, very secret. I mean, they didn't call it the Dark Ages for nothing. And and part of that was because the people were all illiterate, unless you were, you know, one of the higher classes and could afford to go to college and university and get an education. You didn't know squat. And so a lot of superstition crept into the process while we were at it. And so to me, that's important stuff to know, how all that came out and made the pressures that were there that caused Martin Luther to actually do the 95 Theses. And a lot of people think the 95 Theses is all about indulgences, but it isn't. There's more in there than just indulgences. And so it's quite good to go back and read that every once in a while.
Of course, Luther's was not the first attempt at reformation in the church. There were previous attempts to his, and you briefly outlined them. How would you describe the previous attempts at reformation in the church?
Well, they were semi-successful, and I guess probably the outstanding fact, other than Wycliffe and Luther, everybody else lost their heads, basically. I mean, when you became a heretic in the church, I mean, that was a death sentence, fundamentally a death sentence. And so you didn't fare well. And if Martin Luther hadn't been spirited away to Wartburg Castle, he had been in the same boat. And because that's how they dealt with insurrection within the church. You just kill them, that's all. They call them a heretic, and that gives you a free license.
There was, kind of a protection. We spoke earlier about the political and ecclesiastical powers. In a way, Luther kind of benefits from the fact that this is still the case, in that he is able to be protected by, at the time, his very, very powerful prince, Frederick the Wise, who was able, who had the ear of both the emperor and the pope to a certain degree. Talk about that.
Okay, yeah. My understanding of that was it was some years, and I don't know the exact number of years, before the 95 Theses event that Frederick the Wise was able to extract from the Emperor Charles V an agreement that any German citizen needing to go to trial, so to speak, would do so on German ground. Because, again, if you look back at the fate of the other reformers, usually what they do is they got them to a council in a foreign country, and that's when they did them in. John Huss, you know, that happened to him. They give him a free pass, safe conduct from the king of Germany to go to Constance, to the church council, and then they revoked his free pass while he was there. So that made him fair game. And I kind of suspect the same thing would have happened to Martin Luther because, you know, that was only 100 years approximately before then. So that fact that Frederick the Wise was able to get that agreement with Charles V before Martin Luther did this, I think, was the stellar event that saved him the same fate that John Huss had suffered.
We're talking a little Reformation history with Gene White, treasurer and member of the board of directors of the Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission. When we come back, what was Luther's intent in posting the 95 Theses? Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300: Grace Lutheran, Tulsa, Oklahoma; Heritage Lutheran, Valparaiso, Indiana; Mount Olive Lutheran, Duluth, Minnesota; Our Savior's Lutheran, Windham, Minnesota; St. John's Lutheran, Algoma, Wisconsin; Our Savior Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California; St. Mary's Lutheran, Des Moines, Iowa; St. John Lutheran, Yuma, Colorado; Christ Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri; and Redeemer Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. IssuesETC.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.
When we say Lutheran, we mean Lutheran. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Folks, you hear congregations from across the country advertising themselves here on Issues Etc. We often hear people asking, lay people asking, how can I advertise my congregation on your website and with commercials during Issues Etc.? Well, there is a way. It's called the Issues Etc. 300. It's our church sponsorship program. Essentially, we ask congregations in the Issues Etc. 300 to include Issues Etc. in their mission or advertising budget to the tune of $1,000 or more per year. Many congregations already have. The number is growing, and your congregation can as well. Now, you need to remember that right now, many congregations are working toward their budget deadline with a fiscal year that begins in July. They're already making decisions about their budget, so this is a perfect time for you to go to your pastor, your voters' assembly, your church council, and ask them to make part of the mission of your congregation, a budgeted part of the mission of your congregation, Issues Etc. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 and all the benefits that congregations have by joining at our website, issuesetc.org. Click support. You'll find their information on the Issues Etc. 300. Gene White is our guest. We're talking a little Reformation history on this Wednesday afternoon, May the 4th. Gene, picking up where we left off, what was Luther's intent in posting the 95 Theses?
Well, my understanding, or my belief, I guess I would be a better way to say that, is my belief is when he posted that, his intention was to create a scholastic debate on the issues. And again, the timing of the event in terms of what was going on elsewhere in the country, I think, set that off. There's a lot of unrest and a lot of dissension going on in the country before he did that. And so automatically you have an instant following, so to speak, if you're against the church, because so many people had suffered from, you know, wrongs from the church, that if somebody's standing up and fighting against that, they're, you know, automatic supporters, whether they believe what Luther believes or not. They just, you know, they're just supporters. And so you had that kind of power, to speak, going on then. But his was only to create the scholastic debate. I mean, the thing was written in Latin, for crying out loud. Peasants couldn't read Latin. And then somebody who could read it got a copy of it and converted it into German, and that's when things took off. But he was just doing his thing. If there are wrongs that needed to be addressed, you asked for a debate on the subject, and he was certainly within his rights as a supervisor within the monastic orders to do that. It was his perfect role to play that he did that.
The fact that he did it, though, and touched upon the issue of indulgences, which, as you say, was not the entire subject of the 95 Theses, but it certainly was, got him in some hot water. He was, he was, in a way, threatening the income of the church. How did the Catholic Church respond at the time when this, what was intended to be a scholarly debate, actually ended up threatening their income?
Well, I think it could have been a scholarly debate if it hadn't got put on the printing press, but in that it did, then that, you know, changed the entire context of what was happening. But to answer your question directly, I think a little unknown fact is that the money that was being collected from the indulgences were not all going to Rome. Actually, the financial agreement was that half of the money would go to repay the loan, which I think was like 500,000 ducats or something like that, that the Bishop of Mans had taken out to pay for his second bishopric from the Rome. In other words, they sold him a second one for that amount of money, and he had to borrow the money to pay Rome. So now the indulgences are going on to repay the bishop's loan, and the other half of it goes to St. Peter's Basilica. I don't think they put that in their PR when they were advertising that. And so you have that kind of a corruption going on. And by the way, the ecclesiastical rule was one person couldn't be a bishop over two different bishoprics. So right away, for money, they were, violating their own rules. And we're talking big dollars here. And because we're talking big dollars, that's why it went right to the core of the problem as a money issue with Rome, because he's choking off our flow of money we need to build this big St. Peter's Basilica.
In the course of time, as the Reformation continued, of course, Luther was excommunicated, and there were condemnations flying both ways. But Luther had to turn his attention to the state of the Reformation such as it was, whether he intended to break with Rome or not. Eventually, there was that break. And what he found in the early Reformation was a lot of trouble and a lot of ignorance. And he responded with his two catechisms, both intended for lay people. Why was this response necessary?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because Luther figured it out very quickly that in order for the laity to understand what church is about, they need to be educated. And they weren't. They were just, basically illiterate in many, many cases. So the idea that we have to build a system, if you will, and he had some help doing that. Bugenhagen was one of the better ones at the organization part of it. They built that system of education so the laity could be educated, so they would understand properly what church was all about. And it's interesting that the Catholics picked up on that really quick, because when they did the Council of Trent some years after Martin Luther died, that's where the Jesuit order was actually created at that council. And what are they? They are teachers. They took a page right out of Luther's book and decided the best way to counter the Reformation was to go out and educate their own people in Catholic doctrine. So it was kind of an interesting side play off of that.
Why was it so important that for Luther that other than the fact that they needed to know these things, how was it important for the course of the Reformation that the laity were actually being taught right doctrine?
I think it's so they can stand firm when challenged. If you're going to go to the used car dealer and you're going to buy a used car, you better know something about cars. And I think that is sort of a rough analogy, that if you want to be convicted of something that it's right, you need to understand what makes it right. And you can't defend your position if you don't know what makes it right. Same thing about salvation. When you talk about works righteousness, okay, did Christ pay the entire price or only part of it? And so you get into all kinds of different belief systems that separate the Lutherans from other people, because from my understanding, just about every denomination in the world has got a little bit of works righteousness in it. Some have a lot. And that was true in the Catholic Church as well. Christ didn't die for all their sins. He only died for, the original sin. And now you're on your own to take care of the rest of them. And that's a very huge thing. Justification is probably the biggest issue. And if you don't understand proper justification, you can be, led away.
So one other question with regard to that history of the Reformation. In time, both through Luther's writings, Melanchthon's writings, Philip Melanchthon's writings, and the writings mm-hmm. of others, there was compiled, it came to be called the Book of Concord. It included a number of writings, the keystone being the Formula of Concord, the final writing there. The goal appeared to be doctrinal unity, and that has been a hallmark of the Reformation ever since. Why is doctrinal unity among churches, pastors, and lay people so very important?
Well, to me, the quick answer is because of communion. The Orthodox or Confessional Lutheran believes that in taking communion, you are taking communion with your community of believers who believe the same things that you believe and have the same doctrinal bases. That's not a universally accepted point in our modern society, and probably wasn't back then either. But to me, that's a very important part of that the unity for communion in in that belief. The second thing is, you know, I tend to hang around with people who, you know, believe the same things I do, even in public life. And so it, if you, you can't have a community if you have umpteen different diverse views of what a particular topic might be, whether it be justification or the real presence or is baptism to be done at infancy or at age 8 or age 10 or age 6? You know, take your pick. It goes all across the spectrum. So you have all these different opinions of what is right and what's not right. And I don't know how you can say you have unity in faith with any of those people that have those kinds of beliefs.
Well, let's take a break when we come back a few more minutes with Gene White on Reformation history on this Wednesday afternoon, May the 4th. I'm Todd Wilkin. After our conversation with Gene concludes, Dr. Larry Rast will join us. We'll be talking about Friedrich Winneken, remembered by many in the church today. He is one of the founders of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, a great confessor, a president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and one of those models of leadership. Dr. Larry Rast of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, will be our guest. In the second hour of the program, we'll have our regular weekly visit with Jennifer Roback Morse of the Ruth Institute. Then we have open lines for your questions and your comments. Your answer to this question, how should Christians react to the death of Osama bin Laden? We've had a couple of days to think it over and to gauge the reaction, not only worldwide, but especially here in our country. People out there chanting USA, USA, USA in front of the White House. Is that an appropriate Christian response to the death of Osama bin Laden? Open lines, how do we react to the death of Osama bin Laden? In the second hour of the program, when we come back, a few more minutes with Gene White of Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission. In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me. Amen." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths in the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly or annual contributor to Issues Etc. To find out how you can become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron, check out the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Just look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, Scripture, faith, grace, and Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues Etc., and you.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
You've often heard me talk about the pro-life organization called 40 Days for Life. A couple times a year, volunteers man a peaceful, prayerful vigil outside abortion mills. Recently, nearly 250 cities participated. Now there's even a growing number of foreign cities participating. What keeps these pro-life heroes volunteering to stand in all kinds of weather to be a witness for life? It's the number of babies they're saving while sparing moms the emotional and physical devastation abortion brings. Their latest effort saved nearly 500 babies. Since 40 Days for Life has begun, thousands of preborn children have been spared from abortion. Imagine the impact these wonderful volunteers are having on God's kingdom. It's all about love.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Our conversation with Gene White of the CLCC, Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission, continues. Then Dr. Larry Rast is going to join us. We'll talk about Friedrich Winneken on this Wednesday afternoon, May the 4th. Friedrich Winneken, one of the founding fathers of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Gene, I mentioned this before, but you have spent some years compiling this book, Your Reformation Walk, a study in church history from the 1st to the 20th century. How are lay people in particular using this booklet?
Well, that was an interesting thing. When I wrote it originally, it was before CLCC was even in anybody's ideas, and I just did it out of pure interest, both from the historical part, and let me tell you the quick story there is that I met a German couple way back in 1972 in business. We were belonged to the same international committee for a while, and we kept the friendship up, and we, you know, visited back and forth and that sort of thing. And so one of the things he always said to me was that if you come to Germany, we'll go to Saxony and tour that. And as it turns out, he's from Saxony. He was born in Magdeburg. And so when I retired in 1997, I said, let's do it. I'm ready. And so we made that first trip. And coming back, we literally had a suitcase full of pictures, books, descriptions of this cathedral and that cathedral, et cetera. And so after about 2 weeks, after we got home, I said, I can't just put that in the closet. I got to share it. So that was how the book originally got started. And I just put it together and taught it as an adult class at whatever church I was attending at the time. And we had moved two or three times over the years. So that was one of the things I always did was I would reintroduce that course. And it got bigger. I added to it, kept adding to it. It's about three times as big as it was originally. But to me, I was responding to a second problem, which goes back to a real core issue for us Lutherans. And that is, I was, over my lifetime, and I'm getting up there in my age now, but over my lifetime, I had always been running into the situation in the churches where we moved to, that the general understanding of Lutherans about who they are, where they came from, and what is the history, the foundation of who we are as a religious faith was totally lacking. They married into Lutheranism and went through catechism class, and that's all they knew. Or maybe they had not had a very good catechism class and didn't know very much. But nobody really knew anything about the Reformation. They just didn't know. They'd seen the Martin Luther, you know, the film, some of them, but and a lot of people have not seen those either. And so I just said, all right, I got to do this to teach people what the faith that we have really is in the context of the geography, the timing, the history of it, if you will. And so they have a little bit of understanding of what this is really all about. And people really, really liked this class. Every time I did it, I had huge crowds. And so I knew it was a good deal. People just were eager to get this information. It was amazing to me when we first started teaching it, how thirsty people were for it. It was quite uplifting, I might add.
So how can people get Reformation Walk or contact the Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission about a seminar?
Okay, yeah, we do this as a seminar. You can buy it through our website. You can find it on there, and there'll be a link. It winds up taking you to an email message, which eventually winds up to me. Same way for the seminar part of it. Carrie Anderson, our PR lady, you can contact her or me and arrange for a seminar, and we can do it that way. But what I have found interesting over the last few years that we sell this book individually to anybody that wants it as well, and we sell a fair number of copies a year doing it that way. And one of the things I ask is, what do you do with it? And I had a pastor up in the Dakotas, and I can't remember which one it was now, who bought the CD disc for it. And what he's doing is he's running his junior confirmads through this booklet before they start confirmation to give them context, okay? I've sold it to people who want to read through it before they go to Germany, as an example. It's kind of a prep for that. We've sold it as a confirmation gift to a new confirmand, that kind of thing. So it's actually winding up to be very very widely used in that regard.
Tell us a little bit about the CLCC with about a minute here, Gene.
Oh, okay. Well, we are organized to do basically two things. One is to teach seminars and conferences that we do once in a while, too. Next week is one, in fact. Teach the laity primarily about the basic fundamental things that make confessional Lutheranism work. And so we have our seminars are all listed on our website, thecLCC.org. And the second thing we do is we try to foster cooperation between confessional groups. And we're starting to get some activity in that area. We've formed some loose associations with a couple of other groups, and we've done some joint activities together. Actually, next week is an example of that. We're sharing costs with ACL for their conference. We're front-ending them, and because of overlap and one thing or another, we can reduce each of our costs by doing this together rather than being individually in the hotel one before the other. So that's another example of some cooperation. And I think, you know, in days to come, as people see that this actually does work, that we might be doing some other things cooperatively with other groups. So that's our hope and prayer, at least.
Folks, you can find out more about the CLCC, Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission, under the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Gene White is treasurer and member of the board of directors for the CLCC, Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission. He's author of a booklet titled Your Reformation Walk, A Study of Church History from the First to the 20th Century. Gene, thanks for being our guest.
You bet. Thanks for having me.